Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I don't know what to do. Marianne hung up the phone and turned to her husband, Ken. Whenever I talk to Derek these days, I feel like he can't wait to get me off the phone. Oh, you know, guys, Ken's voice came through the newspaper he was reading. We just don't like to talk on the phone, that's all. No, Marianne persisted. It's more than that. He's 25 years old. He's not a kid. And he could pay attention to what I'm telling him. He's getting ready to buy an apartment, and who better than his parents to advise him? After all, it's not like we haven't had any of these experiences, you know. Well, maybe you're doing too much advising for a grown-up. Maybe he wants you to butt out, Ken replied. At some point, he needs to make his own mistakes.
But, honey, Marianne's eyes began to tear up, I'm only trying to help him, no matter how old he gets. I'm still his mother.
From a parent's perspective, how can we retool our relationships with our grown-up children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today has experience with other families raising their grown children and is now dealing with this in her own family as well. Anu-Lisa Look is presently Director of Child and Family Services at the Jewish Social Service Agency in Rockville, Maryland, and is a clinical social worker in practice. She has over 20 years of clinical experience in working with children and adults. Her specialties include working with adolescents, eating disorders, child and family separation and divorce issues. She also has over 20 years of hands-on experience parenting her now 20-plus year-old daughter, Lisa, who has graduated from college and is in the next phase of beginning a young adult life. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Anu-Lisa.
Thank you very much.
What's the biggest myth about parenting grown-up children?
I think that there's so many myths about parenting adult children, but what keeps coming back is that this is about parenting your grown-up children. This isn't about reparenting yourself.
What do you mean by that?
I think that very often when we see our children get to the point that we remember more fondly as the beginning of our own adult life, it brings up a lot of our own issues in terms of our own memories, in terms of how things happened, how we were parented at that point. And we can get very confused in terms of what's in the best interest of our kids versus what we ourselves might have wanted at that stage.
We are not our children.
We are not our children.
Is it harder for parents of kids who are the same sex as they are to divorce themselves from that particular mindset? In other words, if you have a daughter, you're thinking, oh, when I was that age, I did this, I did that, rather than, you know, if you have a son, putting yourself in the same kind of mindset.
I think there's always a very big difference, and I think with the daughter, there's always sort of the wish, the yearning, the fantasy that this is going to be really different, special. She's going to learn so much from me. This is going to be so well appreciated. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just one part of it. I think another part of it is that the baby boomer generation experienced parenting very differently than the way that we baby boomers are trying to parent our adult children. Back in 60s, 70s, even back in the 50s, when kids left for school, parents brought them, dropped them off, went home, and sort of waited maybe for the first shoe to drop or the first call to come, but were not aware of a need to be acutely involved on every level, nor did they presume that they would continue to be that way. The recent generation has always been more involved, and part of that, I think, also might be about reparenting themselves, kind of more of a yearning to have this friendship with the kids, something that feels more touchy-feely, something closer than what was really the norm for when they were growing up.
We're not necessarily talking about amount of time spent, though. We're talking about the sort of the mindset.
I think it's both. Even if you want to just begin with college, but then the ramifications continue, a lot of parents now are spending an awful lot more time on campus when their kids go to school. They're getting more involved on every level, moving the kids, preparing the dorms, making sure that everything is perfect. And then it becomes, I think, very natural maybe in their heads to think that in the next phase, which is the post-college phase, it's going to continue.
And I do know parents who have stepped in and been very much involved when children have their own first apartments with furnishing and advice about drapes and things like that that I wouldn't have dreamed of doing with my kids because they kind of were excited about doing this on their own. Yet parents who have done that, it's a very natural connection for them to just take the next step and the child is moving on and so I'll just come and help.
I think it's just the way that it's been, and if and we're talking about a situation in which the children get along well with their parents. Mm-hmm. Of course, this isn't all children. We can't make that generalization. But in a more amicable, cozy situation, this could become more the norm. And we're even looking at parents that may be putting an awful lot of financial investment into the first apartments and maybe the second apartments and being there to meet a whole lot of needs that young adults probably need to experience as their own needs.
It's interesting. You can see a cultural bias also. When one of my kids went away to college, one of his roommates was first-generation American, and his family had come over from Asia. And I was quite proud of myself that I was not doing what his mother was doing because my son would have been very upset. But this child's mother was putting his clothes in his drawers. And I said to my son, see, I'm not doing that. My son, of course, would have been horrified if I had done it, whereas this other child was probably perfectly happy that this was going on.
Well, I mean, and it's part of expectation. And once those expectations are set up, I think it's hard for everyone to kind of pull back. And this can become a really acute problem at this point because we're still talking about development, character building, setting boundaries. And at some point, obviously, parents are going to have to butt out, are going to have to redefine their roles. And it can come as a very, very big shock if there isn't a kind of a better, more clear goal as to how and when things should start changing.
Why do you think there's this big difference between the way baby boomers are parenting and the way our parents parented?
I don't have the sociological explanation for that, but, I mean, we were talking, you know, the Cold War, and politically we were different. Parents had just sort of begun getting their life together after the war. And the roles were very different. It was very clear that there was money to, you know, that had to be made for the family and provided. Obviously, one change was that a lot more mothers were home at that point. Mm-hmm. There probably was a lot more intensity of mothering until the children went away.
So it could have been that people didn't feel that they had unfinished business.
I mean, I wonder if one of the big factors now was a guilt factor.
And I never went away. I went away to college, but I never moved out of my parents' house until I got married. Mm-hmm. And certainly at that point, I didn't need my parents to do things for me. I also moved out of state, which made a difference. But it just wouldn't have occurred to my parents to step in and do things. But I think I learned from that.
You had it modeled and the business was finished. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it met your needs until the point that you were ready to go to your next step in terms of your own development.
It was a big deal if a young woman moved out and lived in an apartment and she was not married.
Well, it was all different that way. And women still were expected to get their educations done, get married younger, have their children in wedlock, sort of replicate what their parents were doing.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on parenting our grown children.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Anu Lisa Luk about parenting grown children. So do you see this as the biggest challenge for parents at this point, to know when to butt out, basically?
Yeah. I think it's a big challenge when the relationship with the child or the children is amicable, when it's going well, in terms of learning a new rhythm. I think it's even more confusing and more overwhelming when things aren't going well with an adult child. I think that there are probably many cultural differences in terms of how different cultures perceive that they need to handle this. It's a very complicated thing. And what I was finding when I was trying to just begin rethinking the whole area was that there actually aren't many roadmaps at this point. There aren't the multiple books written in this area. I think it's something that we're all sort of stretching to learn and to redefine, which is exciting in itself.
What about the whole aspect of communication with our grown children?
Huge. Huge. It's a different kind of communication. Mm-hmm. One of the things that very much interested me was, in the midst of just thinking yesterday about coming in and talking with the two of you today, I talked to my own daughter. So I asked her a question, which I'm glad I asked her, but I'd never thought to ask her before. I said, well, you and I seem to do very well on many levels. Right? You know, hoping that I was kind of feeling that out correctly. She said, yeah. I said, well, there's one thing that does happen, and I really don't understand it, but I'm going to ask you right now. We can get along and be talking, and you can be telling me about things in your life, and everything seems to be fine. But then every once in a while, we get onto something, and you start calling me mean. You get very, very upset with me, and you say, Mom, you're being mean to me. Stop being mean to me. So I was very, very happy that I had brought this up, because I decided to ask her what it meant to her. What was it that I was doing that was mean? When was I mean? And I guess I was not surprised to hear the answer, but I paused, and I have to really integrate it in my own bag of parenting tricks. She was saying that we could be doing very well on many topics, but if it got to something that it was real personal and sensitive to her, like where she stands right now in terms of looking for the next job, like certain financial issues, like something that she might want to purchase, that, of course, in the back of my head, maybe also coming out of my mouth, I'm not so convinced she can afford, I changed my position and my stance with her. It's no longer chummy. And she feels like immediately I stop listening, and sometimes I start criticizing. And then I start saying the same thing over and over again. Communication.
Yeah. So it's the directive piece that...
The directive piece. And that's about me.
Well, obviously. And I think it's about all of us, because we're used to having that piece in our relationships with our kids. And to not have it is a very hard thing. We don't have that with our friends. We have it carefully with our spouses, and so it's another relationship to pay
attention
to.
I mean, it really becomes power and control issues. Mm-hmm. And what's one thing that we've had to have over our children, with our children, to a certain point, and that's power and control over some of the things that are most loaded, dangerous, and not the areas that children are equipped yet to handle. Now, they're probably the ones that are hardest to let go of. So this becomes, even in my own daughter's eyes, a power issue.
And they feel, I'm sure, kids always feel that if there's a power struggle between parent and child, the parent always has the upper hand. Hmm. We know that that eventually is not the case, but I'm not sure that the kids realize that.
They still do feel it that way. And power and control, I mean, especially in the early 20s, very often now in the late 20s, because many kids are just sort of choosing not to do the kind of developmental growing up until later, one real important element is the financial element. You can be doing and paying for lots of things on your own, but until you really get to that point of financial autonomy, independence, you can be very, very much in charge and independent in areas except the money piece.
Which is a big piece.
Which is a huge piece. Mm-hmm. So the kids are reacting to something real.
When adult children want to return to the nest, we read lots of articles about that these days, what do you recommend for the parents?
Wow.
besides turning their room into an exercise room.
Well, I think that communication and having a clear kind of sense of limits up front is probably the safest way to go into this. And this means trying to already define the re-nesting with a contract. Mm-hmm. And most of us, of course, I don't think are thinking to be that rational up front. I can say that after seeing many people flounder and hearing a lot of horror stories.
Do you mean a written contract? You sign here, I sign there?
I don't think you need to begin with a written contract. The contract could be as difficult or as simple as you're allowed to come home for 6 months while you're here, because in our home you still have a little bit of child status. We will ask for certain things, and you can have your list of demands. It can be probably best if they're quite flexible, but maybe things like if you know you still can't sleep until your child comes in, even your 27-year-old child, mm-hmm. that he or she during the week is in by a certain time. If they're still slobs, God forbid, that the requirement now has to be more demanding than before, that they don't leave certain things around. Whatever, it has to be personalized. But if certain things can be set up front, it might make it easier for everyone to continually assess where you're going. If you've been invited to stay for 6 months, maybe that also helps in terms of direction for the nesting, re-nesting child.
What kinds of interactions do you think are especially productive in these retooled relationships? Are there certain things that we should strive for?
This also is something interesting. I talked to my own daughter about it, and it seemed to me, you know, that the whole aspect of interaction, so we all know we want to change it. It's going to be more peer status connected, sharing of things. But when I asked the question, I got something interesting, and it was, well, you know, if I come home, we end up doing all the things that we always do. We either go to my favorite restaurants, we go to the stores that we like to go to. I'm not saying that's not fun. We really never get into talking about what's new or what's going on. And also, this brings to mind that some kids come home, adult kids, and if parents very often pay for these trips and all. And what do they do? Of course, they reconnect with everyone they know at home, which can make the parents feel shortchanged. Either way, whether you're doing the routine things with the child that's come home or the child immediately leaves for a greener pasture, it's not satisfactory. And maybe neutral ground. Maybe this is when, like, even short mutual vacations together, being on neutral turf so the everyday doesn't impinge.
I think that's a significant thing, because if you think about it, if you have a peer staying with you and it's your house, clearly already there's sort of ownership issues. And for a kid to feel that they're on a different footing with their parents, I think it must be hard when you're staying under the same roof, and who's paying for that roof.
And I think even in thinking back, one of the easiest ways to come home and to begin feeling childlike, losing status, is to be in the family home and get into that role. So if you were in a different, more neutral zone, whatever that would make, you know, make sense to be in your family, it probably would be more successful.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on parenting grown children.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Anu Lisa Look about parenting our grown children. When our adult children's spouses enter the picture, as I mentioned earlier, my spouse entered the picture, that's when I moved out, how can or should we upgrade our relationships or change our relationships with our own grown children?
Well, upgrade, I'm not sure, except that part of an upgrade would probably be to become more mature oneself and to realize that there are going to have to be many more adjustments. With a new spouse come the responsibilities of another person's family, whatever the lifestyle is now going to be. I think this is the time, even if you've been looser in your boundaries in terms of being quite involved with a child, that you really do need to learn to pull back, to begin refocusing more on maybe your own life, to be there, but be there when you're asked to be there in the ways that make sense.
It's interesting. I think we all have real pulls when there's a second family. It's one thing to sort of deal with the kid, but now the kid is bringing somebody into the family. Of course, no one's a kid anymore, that has his or her own family. I remember when I was first married, we didn't want to offend anybody. You know, we were really just totally berserk about all that, for especially for holidays. I mean, that's another thing to have to work out. And so both my husband's family and my family had Thanksgiving dinners with everybody. So we went to two. We'll never do that again.
It's so stressful, and it probably is unnecessary, but it's this kind of whole issue of having to retool, find new normals, and it really isn't easy.
I remember going through that with a lot of different holidays, and we just, from the first year, it was every other, you know, year. And if we went to one holiday, to one family for one holiday, then the next holiday we went to the other family. And hopefully the next year we could remember to
That's
reverse
right.
things.
And then when you have children and throw that into the mix, granted that becomes an even more loaded topic because everyone wants to be with the grandchildren. Obviously there's not enough to go around.
What do you do with the advice you might be feeling inside that you think maybe you should be giving about raising those grandchildren?
Swallow hard.
Someone we know calls it the bloody tongue disease.
Totally no. It's not going to help anyone, and you're not in control, and you already had your opportunity to parent. This time it's not yours.
I think the very beautiful thing that also happens is that your children then suddenly realize what it is to be a parent. One of our children has just become a parent. He seems to have a different viewpoint of our being his parents, a much greater appreciation of what it is to be a parent, and has also asked for suggestions and advice. I hope that never goes away. You know, there's occasionally I'm trying to figure out where I can get information, good, solid information on developmental stages, so I'll know what other babies are doing at 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, whatever. Do you have any suggestions? And I was, of course, thrilled to pieces.
She just bought out the bookstore.
Began to scurry around looking for what I thought would be a good suggestion. I don't know whether he took it or not, but he was happy to ask and receive.
Well, that whole aspect of a new level of respect for what your own parents went through goes a long mm-hmm. way. But, of course, if you're asked to go get the developmental books, you can bring home 4 bags full of them. But don't go with 4 bags if you're not asked.
That's right.
That's right.
Very
and,
good
and
point.
And this is the real double bind of it all.
That's right. We can't say, would you like to ask me some questions?
That's right. Or I found these books just in case you're interested about problems that can occur when your child is 3 months old and you can't really do that and expect to have a good outcome. And I don't think we ourselves would have wanted that.
What resources can you recommend for our listeners who would like to do a little further research on these issues?
There are. I was happy to see a few current books that are coming up. I suspect it's not going to be the end of it. One book that was very good was Jane Addams, who had written in just 2003, a new book by Jane Addams that just came out in 2003, entitled When Our Grown-Up Children Disappoint Us. I thought this was very helpful, very well written. And another book that was quite basic in a very important way was by Roberta Mezell. This was written in 2001, All Grown Up, Living Happily Ever After with Your Adult Children. Judith Viorst, her book entitled Imperfect Control, written in 1998. So I would begin there, and you could branch out.
There's a book, an earlier book by Jane Addams that we hadn't mentioned called I'm Still Your Mother that we thought was a wonderful book. It's lighter, but very, very helpful. It's out of print. It's worth finding if it's in the library.
And I didn't start looking for that book. I was curious about it. It has to be ordered. It's not easily available, but it's probably still worth the search.
Well, this is obviously a topic that is going to be hotter and hotter as the baby boomers' kids get older and older. So this is sort of just the beginning of all this. But we are so lucky to have had you, Annalisa Luke, with us today to help us at least get started on this very big issue. So thanks so very much.
Thank you very much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 237. Tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Zickler Foundation, who have dedicated this show in loving memory of Inez Cass. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.